From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on Monday, September 9th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
The U.S. Department of Justice announced today that it's suing the state of Maine, citing claims that the state's handling of children with behavioral disabilities violates the Americans with Disabilities Act. The lawsuit alleges that the state has failed to provide services for children with behavioral disabilities in their homes, segregating them in hospitals, residential facilities, and the Long Creek Youth Development Center. Nancy Cronin, executive director of the Maine Developmental Disabilities Council, says in some cases, children have spent months in hospitals waiting for placement, and a growing number have been sent to facilities out of state.
So what DOJ is saying is if we had a system of care that helped these children in a timely way, we wouldn't need these as many higher levels of care. And right now, I would argue that there's almost no levels of care there.
A spokesperson for the Maine Department of Health and Human Services says in a statement that the state is deeply disappointed by the lawsuit and will continue to work to strengthen vital behavioral health services. One of Maine's largest recyclers is planning a multi-million dollar upgrade of its Portland plant in anticipation of handling more waste. EcoMaine intends to borrow $35 million to build an advanced waste sorting system and expand landfill space for incinerator ash. The new processor uses imaging technology to separate materials, says EcoMaine CEO Kevin Roche. It will replace a system largely designed to sort newsprint and that has frequent jams. And Roche says EcoMaine mostly handles lots of cardboard boxes now.
Paper packaging has really taken over the recycling bin, and so we need a new design, and plus the old system is now nearing 20 years old.
With the upgrades, Roche says EcoMaine can accept more materials as Maine finalizes packaging regulations to promote recycling. The company also wants more towns and cities to join on as community owners. The Maine Department of Environmental Protection says it will send representatives out door to door this week to speak with Brunswick homeowners who may have been affected by the spill of firefighting foam 3 weeks ago at the Brunswick Executive Airport. Carol Bousquet has more.
The DEP has identified about 45 residential properties that staffers will visit this week to speak with homeowners about testing their drinking water. The state reports that three sets of surface water samples above Harpswell Cove taken the day of the spill, 3 days later, and 1 week later show PFAS concentrations are decreasing at sites closest to the spill location. But PFAS concentrations at the Picnic Pond outlet and in salt marshes above Harpswell Cove have increased, as foam removal efforts, natural flow, and tidal cycling have drawn foam to these areas. Sample results from Harpswell Cove are expected this week. The state says the public drinking water supply for Brunswick Landing from the Brunswick Topsom Water District was not affected by the spill and has been confirmed safe to consume. Last week, the Brunswick City Council issued a non-binding resolution that calls for the Midcoast Regional Redevelopment Authority, which oversees the development, to investigate how the accident occurred, to create a plan to alert residents if another spill occurs, and to remove any remaining foam from the premises. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
Maine is expanding a ban on lead fishing lures to protect loons from fatal poisonings. Peter McGuire reports.
Starting this month, it is illegal to sell small painted lead jigs. The state law passed last year extends Maine's ban on the use of bare lead tackle to fish in rivers and lakes. Maine Audubon biologist Laura Williams says despite steps taken to reduce lead in the environment, poisoning is still the third leading cause of death for loons in the state. She says loons ingest sinkers contained in fish or in gravel they eat to help digestion.
Once that piece of lead tackle is inside the loon's gizzard, they will die of lead poisoning.
The conservation group is offering to pay local tackle shops cash for any lead jigs still in stock. The gear will be prohibited come 2026, but Williams says anglers can still buy plastic lures and flies with lead weights. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
Over the last 30 years, hundreds of thousands of people have fled Somalia due to political instability and civil war. Some have resettled in Maine, seeking peace and safety for their families. But there is an established global trend of displaced Somalis returning home to seek public office. One man who has lived in Maine for over a decade has set his sights on returning to his homeland to run for governor of his former state. Ari Snyder reports.
Like so many of his fellow Somali refugees, Abdullahi Ali was raised in refugee camps in Kenya. In 2009, he was resettled in Maine and soon found success here. He started a nonprofit that focuses on mental health and well-being in immigrant communities, got a doctorate in public policy from USM, and recently launched an aid organization to support communities in East Africa. Through that charity, Ali began making trips back to his home state of Jubaland in southern Somalia. He says he encountered a population grappling with violence, government corruption, and a lack of economic opportunity.
But also, there's so many good people with good intentions that want to and would love to see things change, but don't have the capacity to do so.
Ali says he was motivated to offer those people a hopeful vision of the future, one with greater government accountability and transparency. He helped form a new political party and threw his hat into the ring to run for president of Jubaland, one of six federal states in Somalia.
If, you know, someone like me does not take the risk to bring about that change, who else will do it?
Ali moved to neighboring Kenya this summer, where he can meet with leaders from Jubaland and make trips to and from Somalia. Kenya is home to one of the largest Somali populations outside of Somalia, and Ali says he can't travel widely in Jubaland due to the strong presence of the insurgent group Al-Shabaab. Ali is joining a long tradition of displaced Somalis returning to seek public office.
So it's actually quite common in the Somalia context.
Omar Mahmoud is an East Africa policy analyst with the International Crisis Group. He says that's in part because many in the diaspora have been able to get political training and educational opportunities abroad that are not accessible in Somalia. Still, Jubaland is not an easy place to seek public office. The state is a stronghold for the extremist militant group Al-Shabaab, which controls much of the territory, severely limiting the regional government's authority. And Mahmoud says the incumbent president, who's held power for over a decade, is deeply entrenched.
He has control, you know, complete control over government functions. He will have a lot of sway over how this election proceeds.
How and when the election proceeds is also in flux. Originally intended for November, Mahmoud says it'll likely get delayed. And despite growing interest in universal suffrage, he says the election will probably be decided by clan elders who select members of parliament who in turn pick a president. Despite the uphill battle, Ali's campaign has galvanized many of his friends and supporters in Maine's Somali community, including Mohammed Khalid.
They're excited that someone, you know, with Abdullahi's caliber that actually doesn't have to do this is doing this.
Khalid grew up in Lewiston and co-leads a civic engagement group focusing on communities of color in Maine. He also considers Ali a friend and mentor and says he's helping advise the campaign from afar. Khalid says Ali's candidacy represents a ray of hope for a more democratic future in Somalia.
Where there's, you know, women are uplifted, young people are uplifted, everyone has a say in what actually goes on in their community.
As he navigates the complex political currents of Jubaland's regional elections, Ali says he's trying to bridge two worlds. While engaging with and studying the U.S. political system, Ali says he came to see accountability and transparency as fundamental values for someone holding public office.
So I want to bring those values to my local community in Jubaland, but at the same time, I also want to understand and acknowledge that the environment is different, the culture is different, the people are different.
Ali says he's under no illusion that he alone can upend decades of insecurity, weak public institutions, and other challenges. But he says he at least wants to offer a platform for Somalis who want something different. If he doesn't win, Ali says he'll continue to stay engaged in Somali politics while also spending time in Maine. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, we'll look at how to prepare for the start of home heating season. I'm Nicola Grisco. Thanks for listening.